You've just entered the law offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker. If you've come for actual legal advice, you need to turn right around, honey. You need to get out of here, because you ain't going to get none of that. They quibble, and they squabble, and they bicker. But if you want to hear meaningless opinions, this is the right place. They got plenty of that. Stuff that makes no sense at all. They go off on tangents. It's crazy talk. If that's your thing, keep listening. They'll keep talking.
It is July 29th, the year 2020. We are returning to the law offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker with your hosts, Matt, Brendan, and Greg. And our client today, Revolution is in the air. So, And if anybody's been following any type of news these days, you might have a clue as to what that could potentially mean, but there's a lyric from Bob Dylan from the song Tangled Up in Blue where he says there's music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air, and that line has always kind of stuck with me over the years, where I thought it was just a really well-crafted lyric, and it's been running through my head for the last month or so with all the different activities that have been happening here in Portland and in Minnesota and Chicago and a lot of the other major cities, Seattle as well, because there's this agitation going on amongst the general public and people are looking for responses and answers they're not getting. And this is something that spurred earlier revolutions in our country. Going back to like the American Revolution, that was based upon the British government treating us badly and taxing us without representation. And there were numerous different people who spoke out against it. And if you kind of do the comparison of then and now, the people who are speaking out were younger people. They were in their 19s and early 20s, some people in their 30s, and it feels
they're,
like...
They're, wait, hold on, they're 19s? Are there multiple levels of 19s?
It's like more than one person who was 19. Let's just say.
Oh, okay.
Well, actually,
oh,
I'm just thinking of one. So there's only one person of the revolutionaries of that time, of the American Revolution, that I knew was 19. But there were others like in their early 20s. So like Marquis de Lafayette, he was 19 years old. Alexander Hamilton, Aaron Burr, those guys were like 21, 22 years old. Thomas Jefferson was in his early 30s. George Washington, late 40s. The oldest one amongst all those guys was Benjamin Franklin, who was in his 70s, and he had attempted a revolution in the 1750s that went nowhere, where he had a slogan called Join or Die, and he had a flag that had a snake that was segmented, and the whole idea was to put it together. And this is, you know, like the beginnings to the American Revolution that occurred. Now, I mentioned
I remember the segmented snake.
Okay. Yeah.
Was that old back then, though? Like, didn't most people die when they were like 55 or something back in the 1700s?
Well, I would think 70 would be old back in the late 1700s. Sure.
Like really old. Like that would be like being 105 now.
I don't know if I'd go that far. I'd say it would be in the 70s of now because okay. It's like, you know.
Well, I don't know.
Haven't changed.
The years haven't changed, but life expectancy has. True. I think 70 back then is probably a good 90 nowadays. I mean, you know, shit, we're all in our 50s.
Okay, I probably
should be dead back then.
About health insurance, yeah. I probably would have croaked about 15 years ago.
Exactly.
Well, even if you had it, they'd be putting leeches on you and doing all kinds of dumb shit that would kill you faster than the disease.
Maybe leeches would have been fun.
Yeah, you're into that.
You make pets.
Leeches are awesome.
Are they? What makes them awesome, Brendan?
I don't know. They just seem awesome. I think that I want to bring back leeches.
Do you?
Yeah, I think
just
it's a
for friends
thing.
And family, or for everyone?
For everyone. I think if I'm going to run for president in 2024, that's going to be one of my slogans: is leeches for everyone.
There is actually a medical use for leeches. They still use They actually, in some areas of the body, need to like have blood drained, and that's what a leech will do. So very now and then they use it. It's like a weird thing.
So like a genitalia thing?
I guess, yeah. It would be like saltpeter.
I mean, if you need blood drained from that area.
If you brought up saltpeter twice in the last three podcasts.
I know. A guy I'm wondering if this is
like, did you like open your word of the day calendar in the last month or so?
I don't know what comes up. I'm always thinking about genitalia. And
thinking about saltpeter.
To be honest, I brought up genitalia. You were just talking about leeches.
No, he brought up saltpeter. I was wondering about the leeches, though. It's like, do you put the leeches on your eyeballs? Where are you going to put your leeches?
You can put them anywhere. I don't know. Wherever needed. Topically.
I think if you had them on your eyeballs, it would probably be really painful if you extracted them.
I don't think they put them on eyeballs.
Got contact lenses because I have a real thing about sticking my finger in my eye.
Yeah.
So, yeah, leeches in my eyes, definitely a no-go.
Well, that is the thing that separates us from the animals. We're the only animals that will willingly poke ourselves in the eye.
So in your research, Matt, have you seen that like revolutions were all young men, the Russian Revolution?
Well, I didn't research all of the revolutions that occurred, but the French Revolution kind of came out of the American Revolution where they went, we helped them to get separate from their monarchy. So it became part of that with the French Revolution. But there have been like two other situations in American history that were considered revolutions by some people at the time, although they're not necessarily historically actually revolutions. For example, the first one is considered to be the War of 1812, which is really our attempt to take over Canada, is what the War of 1812 was. It was like us going, okay, we want the land up there, and we just had incompetent generals, and so we lost. But
isn't that where Canada came down and burned the shit out of Washington, D.C. or something?
Well, England, did too.
England supported them because they were definitely a British colony at the time. So, yeah, Britain basically came down and burned the White House.
But is that necessarily a revolution? Just invading a country doesn't mean it's a revolution.
That's enforcing our borders. So we were like pushing out like a revolt against them because we were moving into Canada, which is where Britain was still controlling, right? So some people consider that. It might not necessarily be that because it was more of, I think, our government making that happen or somebody who just decided they wanted more poutine. But
Canada's a rich, bountiful nation. I'd like to conquer them.
Get some poutine, my druthers, some back bacon, and maybe a lot of ice.
Germany annexing Poland is a revolution. It's just, it's invasion. You know, I don't even know if that counts as a revolution.
War of 1812. Canadians are terrorists.
Canadians thought that we were invading their country. And so for them, we consider War of 1812 was not that big of a deal. That was kind of a win. But for them, it was a big win because it stopped our incursion into trying to take their land.
Do we consider it a win, even though Washington, D.C. burned down in the history books?
We didn't lose.
Well, we did. We lost our invasion. We didn't make our invasion plan.
Well, we didn't get retaken over by the British, is what I'm saying.
That's true.
Take us
all over. Right. Yeah. Continue on with your history lesson,
all right,
Professor.
So the third one would be the American Civil War, which would be considered. Some people call that the second American Revolution too. But if you count 1812, then if you count it, then that would be considered the third. Anyway, or not at all. But you know that is an interesting point in time too, because Abraham Lincoln was the very first Republican president. In case you guys didn't know. And the interesting thing for me that I found was that Lincoln was actually the Republican parties were working together with what were called the War Democrats of the time. There were peaceful Democrats and there were war Democrats. The peaceful Democrats were anti-abolition, they were anti-war, and they wanted to just basically give in to the Confederacy and give them what they wanted.
So basically, like a bunch of pussies, like the current Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Were they giving in to? Well, the
difference. Given a lot.
The difference is that they were the anti-abolitionists, though. They were against slave rights.
Right. So they were against the working poor.
Yeah.
Much like the current Democratic Party.
Well, much like the current Republican Party too.
Oh yeah, no, for right. sure. I'm not giving them a pass. I'm just saying they were in other words,
the ideology of the time, the Democrats of the time, were more like the Republican Party of our time.
The Republican Party always was the rich party. They always were the wealthy party, of moneyed interests.
They were kind of pro business back then. Yeah. But they were more socially aware back
yes,
then.
Yes, definitely.
The final, I think, the nail in the grave of liberal Republicans was, I think, 1930 is when, or 19. It was around the time of Teddy Roosevelt, when Roosevelt had lost his reelection and decided to try to get reelected as the Bull Moose Party, which is a progressive party. And he had been a Republican, and then the Republicans kind of shifted their ideologies to becoming more conservative, more fiscally conservative, more socially conservative, and the Democrats started shifting the other direction. So it was interesting.
Really? I mean, the Democrats were pretty pro-racism up until the, I don't know, the 40s, 50s, 60s in terms of the South.
They were the party of racism.
It was shifting at that time overall, you know, because right. then Franklin Roosevelt came about and the New Deal Democrats came into play. That's when you started getting a much bigger shift in ideologies within the political party. So I always find it funny when the Republicans of now go, well, you know, it was Democrats who like were mainly pushing the KKK back then. I'm like, oh, well, then you guys decided to take on that banner and continue with it. It's like you're kind of ignoring that whole shift, are you? It's like you want to take credit for freeing the slaves, fine, but are you not going to take credit for the fact that a lot of people are like pushing the standard of racism currently?
I would assume we could all agree that the two-party system is bullshit, and we need to go back to the Bull Moose Party, because a bull moose is way cooler than an elephant or a donkey.
Well, yeah. I was about to bring up with Lincoln, technically he wasn't a Republican per se. It was Republicans worked together with the War Democrats, created something called the New Union Party. And it was really the New Union Party that had won the election, with Lincoln and Andrew Johnson as the vice president on that. And it basically dissolved shortly after. I think the last president may have been Andrew Johnson, who was like elected or who was in office under the New Union thing. But it kind of dissolved once the War Democrats moved away, and the Peace Democrats lost all control once the Civil War was won. So there was nothing for them to argue about anymore.
That sounds like a bad 80s band. The New Union Party. That could totally be an English band.
You know, it's funny. There is a guy in Washington State who is a perennial candidate for various different public offices. His name is Mike the Mover. He actually changed his name to Mike the Mover. And the only reason I know this is I was looking up the New Union Party, and he decided in his last run that he was under the New Union Party, because he's run as a Republican and as a Democrat in the past, and he's never gotten any traction. The main reason he does it is to get promotion for his moving business. But anyway.
Like Donald Trump does.
So apparently his last
good
one.
Good for him. I know. Good for him. That's about the last, you know, legitimate use of politics in America at this point.
Well, he had like 84 different criminal violations for not having a license to run his moving business, and that was kind of the reason why he kept running for office.
So he could give himself a license illegally. I'm in charge now.
That's right, and he legally changed his name to Mike the Mover, too. It was Michael something else, Michael Sparks or something. This
guy's not right in the head. He doesn't sound...
Probably why he's never gotten elected. Anyway, he recently, I think in the last couple of years, actually changed his name again. Now he's Uncle Mover.
A worse 80s band. Or maybe a 90s band.
I think, didn't they do a duet?
No. I think that's a 90s band. It's a 90s kind of hip-hop country band. Uncle Mover.
A 90s hip-hop country rap band?
There was some of those, I'm sure.
It was like 311 or Smash Mouth.
No, 311 is more
or the actual band Cracker.
Yeah, Uncle Cracker.
Yeah, okay. Uncle Cracker, Uncle Mover, they all work together. Okay.
They're all the same. Uncle whatever.
Getting back to our client, because our client is very serious. Our client is very disturbed about what's going on because, you know, there is revolution in the air that we hear it. As a matter of fact, I just came across a statement from John Kerry earlier today where he even used similar wording. I think I lost the article, but essentially he was giving an interview stating that if the elections go south in November because of Republican machinations to prevent people from getting to the ballot, that is the is tantamount to lighting a fire for revolution. Those are not.
Yeah, we have to protect the Republic.
So the article is saying, well, obviously Kerry is setting the stage for revolution, setting the stage for it happening, because Kerry said it's because that's how I and Hillary Clinton lost our elections, was because of the electoral college. Was a popular vote. You know, and then of course they would ask him, so John, why the long face?
We should have had a revolution in 2000 when Bush stole the election. That whole shenanigans in Florida and all that bullshit. That was obviously
Hey, easy now with the Florida accusations.
Hey, you guys were the worst time. Worst thing you guys did.
What guys?
The Floridians.
Oh, the hanging chads?
The flow right is all that shenanigans, like keeping the people out of the court to like they.
I'm gonna be completely transparent to my two Portland liberal friends. I voted for Bush that year.
Well, good for you.
Who's a liberal? Who are you calling a liberal?
You.
I'm only a liberal compared to conservatives, but I'm not a liberal compared to liberals. I'm conservative. Yeah,
liberal. We can certainly talk about the degrees of liberalness, because up here, or down here, I guess, I'm a radical liberal. If I moved up there, I'd be a conservative, I'm sure. Right. I mean, I still talk to friends up in Seattle, and I say things, and they're like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know. I guess I'm crazy.
What are they saying is wrong with you? What do they think is wrong with your point of view? What is it that you're saying?
Well, let's see. I try not to obviously get too involved on Facebook about this sort of stuff. But, you know, I'm not. Let's pick a topic. There's multiple topics.
Pick one. Anyone.
I know.
Start with one.
So let's talk about.
Sex, baby?
No.
I was thinking the same thing, Matt.
Let's talk about for a second, because I think it's sort of to the point of the revolution as it exists. Let's talk about white privilege for a minute.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I grew up with a single mom. I lived in basically the ghetto of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Growing up, I experienced zero white privilege. I had no sort of privilege guaranteed to me because I was white, other than the fact that the black kids in the neighborhood took care of me because I could talk them out of situations if something came up because I was white.
I think you've got a misinformation about what white privilege actually is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys
educate me on it and I'll listen.
Yeah, white privilege isn't saying that every white person is born privileged. It's just that you have less things in your way, obstacles to getting out of that. Like when you get a bank loan, you have a higher chance of getting one. You have a higher chance of not getting beat up by a cop for a speeding violation. You got a higher chance of getting hired. So yeah, you started off poor, but there would have been more obstacles in your path if you were black, right, and you might have stayed poor forever.
Yeah, it's not because people get any benefits from being white. It's they're latent benefits, essentially. They're not like, oh, you're white, so here is this.
Here's $1 million check when you're born.
Well, yeah. Remember when, Eddie Murphy was on Saturday Night Live all those years ago, and he did a bit where he decided to dress up in being white all day.
Yeah, and, white like me.
He found up, like, as soon as the black person had left, they're like, okay, here, we open up our stores so you can take anything you want here for free. He's like, oh, that's what it means to be white. Yeah, we're not saying that's what white privilege is. White privilege is essentially you don't have the obstacles that black people do based upon their race, and that's essentially what the privilege is. But I think it gets turned around where people don't really know that that's the concept. They think it's, oh, I've got something better. Yeah, there's plenty of white people living in ghettos, plenty of people who have horrible circumstances in their lives, and that's not discounted at all. It's just more that we don't experience the same level of racism that black people do. We experience right?
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Got it.
Yeah.
So answer me this. Okay. I scored really well on the SATs, but because I was a poor white kid, I had no opportunity for the types of scholarships had I been a black or color or brown person. So where does my white privilege, where does it come in there? Because it seems to me that that's more of an ethnic privilege. I'm not arguing against it. I think that should happen. But I'm saying I was an intelligent, poor, white kid. I didn't get the same opportunities as an intelligent African-American kid of the same economic status.
Yeah, but that's like one case
different
in which...
Hold on a second. Have different opportunities that are not allowed to African-American people. So
like
they have
what?
Those that have been set up because they've been denied things for so long. We have so many different, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of loans available from, like, the Daughters of the Confederacy and the Sons of the Confederacy that I'm sure.
Oh, come on now, man. Let's not conflate it to that kind of level of racism. Let's keep
saying
no?
that it's available. Which they,
I know, there's a Nazi loan available to white people that Jews can't get. Oh, come on.
Well, that's a whole different issue.
Oh, but, it is.
No, unfortunately, Brendan, you were the victim of it, but it was a needed redress because of all these obstacles to black people. They were like, well, let's give them a leg up. Let's have some affirmative action.
Oh.
These black people. So, unfortunately, you as a just one guy, you shouldn't have to pay for the sins of history, but
right.
someone has to, I guess. And so
that
suck. That time in your life, that wasn't fair, technically, but it was there for a pretty good reason that they have scholarships for black
kids. I think the idea was to just help level the playing field a little more.
I completely agree with you. I'm not suggesting for a second that affirmative action isn't good. I'm not suggesting for a minute that the types of policies that have been put in place to allow more African Americans equal opportunity based on their performance to be at levels that they wouldn't normally be. I 100% believe in all of that. What I'm trying to grapple with is what, as a 50-year-old white heterosexual male, I am supposed to do about all of this. Because it seems to me that I'm supposed to feel guilty? I'm supposed to feel bad? What am I supposed to do? I mean, yes, all this crazy stuff happened, it's true, and I am 100% in favor of every sort of policy we can put in place to turn that around. But that simply seems to be not enough, and I need to be shamed yet even more.
I think I get where Brendan's coming from.
I want to know who's shaming him. Who's shaming him? I'm not feeling any shame. I'm not feeling any shame. I'm not feeling any pressure. I'm not feeling any type of leverage being.
I've talked to some young kids where it's like the old Minor Threat song, Guilty for Being White. And it's like, Brendan, I mean, everyone would say this is, you can't really say this. Like, I'm not racist. As far as I know, consciously, I don't act that racistly in my life. I never have. But, you know, I'm basically to blame. I'm part of the problem. A lot of people say that. If you're white, you profit from this system in place. And I have. I know I have. I know there's been many less jobs I would have had. They would have just been like, oh, it's a black guy. It's not harm. I wouldn't have known why. Maybe I would have been like, oh, I guess I just really qualified enough. But I would have had less. And I barely had any opportunities in my life. I'm very poor, but I had them.
That's by choice, Greg. Don't just say you haven't had opportunities. You've had plenty of opportunities. You've just chosen not to take them.
Yeah, but I still sometimes needed a job and I couldn't get it. And I couldn't get a good job. I mean, it wasn't that easy. But I'm saying it would have been harder if I was black.
Yeah. Yeah, if you were a black person in your circumstance, Greg, yeah, life would definitely be harder. I actually agree with that. You've had it easier, I think, because you're white, but a black person in your same circumstances would have it harder because they would be looked upon with a little more frowny, looked upon with more of a negative eye. My wife was telling me that a long time ago she worked for a particular chain, well-known department store chain, and she was part of the security, the people who would get the shoplifters, and they were specifically given instructions to profile African Americans who came into the store. Like,
sure.
they were told that they are more likely to steal. That was specific instructions from the bosses in that particular department store, and so that in and of itself exemplifies white privilege.
Right, and that's fucking horrible.
Right.
No one will deny that.
Yeah.
But my point is, so we're going to burn everything down. We're going to revolutionize. To what extent can we change effectively the way people think?
Well, allegedly, under the Constitution of the United States of America, we have the okay to burn it down and start over again.
Thomas Jefferson.
Okay, but
that's actually in the Constitution.
No, I'm it's not really in the Constitution necessarily.
Have you
can
read
you want,
it?
Can you want to point? You want to point out what part in the Constitution says "burn it down"?
I think no, Thomas I said it doesn't said say that. "Burn it down."
Yes, you did.
I said well, that, but I didn't mean that it actually.
Oh, you said,
words.
But you didn't mean. Mr. Quibble said, but he didn't mean. Okay, so read right, me. The
I know when I'm being overly interrupted. Someone's just trying to be funny. So what I said was yes, he was going to burn it down, but not that the words "burn it down" are in the Constitution. You silly, silly man.
Okay.
No, they said so, "fuck it up." I think you have the right to fuck up fuck this country.
Thomas Jefferson said, "No matter what, just fuck that shit up." Shit,
you
shit
can tear this. Tear this whole motherfucker down. That's what he said.
Yeah, the Constitution was a living, breathing document, right? As we find it. I'm going to see if I can track down that actual quote.
While you look that up, I just want to say a quick thing. Oregon, I just found out, still has legalized slavery in our Constitution, and they're looking to change that. The wording well, still says. Well, that's yeah, about time, huh?
Yeah, that's about time.
There's a lot of states in the South, though. I heard even like 10 years ago, technically it was still on the books. And then they, you know, they passed laws to say, just for the sake of propriety, let's get rid of this. It's just unseemly. Yeah.
What about Oregon? I missed that part. I was looking for something.
In our Constitution, they never changed it just because it was a moot point. But apparently it's still legal to own slaves. And they want to get that word excised, you know. Not that anyone's trying to own slaves now, but
well, you know, there might be something you said about a good cleaning out of all the unused or unnecessary laws that are on the books.
There's a lot of them.
I'm sure.
Dropped because they don't really apply, but a lot of that stays in place. And, you know, I've been thinking about this recently going, okay, so if we were to have, quote unquote, an actual revolution, what would that look like? What would actually be happening? What would change? And we know what would happen right off the bat is that Trump would bring the troops together to basically put down any uprisings and shoot to kill and, you know, knock it out, because he's always wanted to be referred to as the new Lincoln, and he's definitely done an excellent job of trying to start up a whole new civil war so that he could then be the one who brings the country back together in that sense. You know, and ironically, at the time, Abraham Lincoln, people were using a lot of verbiage similar to how they're accusing Trump these days, too. They called him a despot. They said that he was ruining the country. In some cases, he was called...
he did some despotic things.
He was
did
called
some things that
Abraham
really,
Africanus, and one thing that I read, one newspaper editor said that he needed to be, you know, stabbed with a dagger and that it wouldn't be a bad thing. So, yeah, he definitely had a lot of people working against him in that era.
Yeah.
It harkens to a Civil War mentality because of the divisiveness between not just the political parties, but just an everyday discourse on frickin' Facebook. People don't act this way to each other in person. They only do it on Facebook.
Yeah, that's a new thing.
Social media.
Because you don't have to be brave. You can be a coward and just sit in your home and write the foulest shit. Nobody's going to know who you are.
Yeah, which is what we're all doing right now.
They can see our face, though.
Uh-oh. They can't see Brendan. Brendan is the Unabomber today.
I am the Unabomber today. Not that this video... But anyway, I'm just playing along in case video ever happens. But here's the thing.
it will one day. One of these days.
Is this current... What is the foundation? What should the revolution be about? So well, that's where... Hold on, let me finish,
Matt. Okay,
Matt.
I thought you asked a question that you wanted an answer.
I didn't realize
you're being rhetorical. I'll shut up.
Okay, I'm being rhetorical. Let me finish.
I will. I'll take a nap.
No, finish your research on the Constitution where it says, fuck everything up and burn it down. So my point is that what is this revolution all about? Is it really about white privilege? Is it really about race relations? Or is the basis of it, which is my contention, really about economics? And the problem is that those economics adversely affect African Americans more than they do whites. My experience being what it was, I was not the average white kid. But the problem was my economics. Had I been a middle-class white kid with my scores, I could have gotten to college and mom and dad would have helped. But because I wasn't, I didn't, and that's a matter of economics. So I think that the whole race issue, while important, I want to make that clear, while important, is not the basis of the revolution. The revolution is based on the fact that the rich are controlling the economy and a larger and growing number of people who used to be okay, middle class and otherwise, white, black, doesn't matter, are not doing okay. And that's really what's at the heart of what's going on right now.
I think that's been going on for, you know, as long as America's been around. But I think why things are getting so fervent, if you will, is like, this is unprecedented. Like this, we have a president who basically doesn't seem to respect any tenet of the Bill of Rights or the Constitution. He brags about it, how journalists suck and they have no right to criticize him, like he's a king. And it's like, it's scary. Like, I think there's a needed revolution. Even if America magically had no racial problems, this is the time for revolution. When Trump keeps tweeting these things that are the things that a fascist would say, like, I have the strongest people on my side. I might not step down if I think this is fraud. Yeah, that's what all dictators say when they have coup d'etats. There was fraudulent voting. I had to take over for the good of the country. I mean, I can't picture it going any other way. That guy is not going to step down. So, of course, Americans are like, holy shit, is this like the end of America? Because to me, that's America. America is this great country, bountiful, beautiful country. But it's also what makes us special is that Bill of Rights and the Constitution. That's what was set us apart from everyone. We were the only one who had anything like that for a long time. That's the being an American. Like, I'm a patriot because I love that idea. It's been corrupted so many times, unfortunately.
I think the current revolution is really against douchebaggery. I think that's actually what everyone is revolting against, is the fact that we have douchebags running everything, regardless of race.
They always have, though. They always have.
All right, I get what you're saying, but the thing is that we've, I think, become a little more enlightened as a culture because of the recognition of how bullying is so prevalent and actions that have been taken against it. Plus, with the rise of feminism in its newer state, of modern feminism, like where the Me Too movement has come about of this, is it's seeing that white Americans, white middle-aged male Americans, have gotten away with us. So much. Yes, us. We've gotten away with so much shit and bullied our way through things through force of personality, through our methodologies that have essentially browbeaten people. That's why there aren't that many women in positions of power as there could have been. That's why there aren't as many people in minority states as there could have been, because we make up the majority of the douchebags. So I think that's kind of where some of it, so that's where a lot of this feeling of lack of power and injustice is coming from, is because they're being taken advantage of by these quote-unquote alpha personalities that don't care that much for everybody, and it's more of a selfish thing of having to posture and be greater in whatever way they can think of. I think it's a lack of truly caring about one's fellow man is what the real revolution is about. And the revolution, if we were to change something within the Constitution, and really the area within the Constitution that I'm talking about is Article 5, which talks about creating amendments to the Constitution, as well as you have the possibility of amending the Constitution itself within Article 5 of the Constitution, to answer that earlier question. Anyway, so because of the nature of humanity and how there are so many people who are unwilling to change and become better people, that's where the biggest pushback is coming from. So, you know, Trump and his douchebag glory has created the situation that he's created. Not that there weren't plenty of douchebags before him in power as well, or in positions
none
of power throughout all. You know, I kind of disagree about that. He's a gigantic one, but there's certainly worse people.
Andrew Jackson,
Trump.
Maybe.
No, I don't mean his president. I mean worse people in general.
Oh, yes.
Well, for sure there are worse people.
Well, he's not going around slicing people's throats, Greg, like by hand. Come on.
But
he would order that.
He could order it, but that means he's doing it himself.
Yeah.
But we don't know that he's ordering
it. Just as evil. He's just too wimpy to do it.
No, I think he's more of a passive.
I agree with the douchebag analysis. I think that's a fair statement.
We should make the douchebag the anti-douchebag party.
Right. I've always said that, you know, sort of a fundamental two rules of living for me, and I've imparted this to my children, is one, give a shit; two, don't be a dick. And
those are good rules for living.
Yes, I think those are very common basic rules.
But you have to steer them what to give a shit about.
That's true. Now that's true. And that's where where it gets fuzzy.
Don't give a shit about the Confederate flag because it's meaningless.
Right.
Well, it's meaningful, actually.
But
in a bad way.
Right, but giving a shit implies that if somebody is upset by the Confederate flag, you should give a shit about them too.
Yeah.
So that's,
if they are upset that you're burning the Confederate flag, you should give a shit about them too.
I think to a certain extent.
Uh-huh.
I think to a certain extent that the radicalization of, well, if I burn the Confederate flag and Jimmy Joe Bob is pissed off about it, well, fuck him. That's a part of douchebaggery.
Okay.
I mean, I don't understand him. I don't necessarily agree with him, but I could certainly talk to him and try to understand him. Isn't that what we're trying to accomplish?
I would try to talk to him too, but I would still burn the Confederate flag if I felt like it. I'd be like, this is a horrible sign of hatred. I mean, if Billy Bob likes his flag so much, I'd kind of wonder about Billy Bob. And be like,
well, that's what
is
he's
this a guy even want to know?
It's like, it's, well, possibly everybody can change their point of view about something. Well, there's Robert Byrd, who is a longtime politician. I think he was from West Virginia or what have you. And he, in the beginning of his career, was a member of the KKK. He went on to be one of the most liberal members of Congress later on. Another person, Supreme Court Justice Hugo Black, also a guy who in the beginning was a member of the KKK, realized that there was something seriously wrong with this somewhere along the way and reversed his point of view.
But they're politicians. They just have to follow the way the wind's blowing.
Not necessarily. There are other guys who've never done that.
Well, let me give you a real example.
Yeah, because I just made up those examples. Those weren't real.
Seriously? Let me give you a non-historical political example.
Okay.
That's what I mean by real.
Okay.
Real defined as not something I read out of Wikipedia. A personal experience.
I did my reading before Wikipedia.
An anecdote, if you will. Personal anecdote.
Personal anecdote.
Okay.
So I've worked in the black community.
Which means it's
and my
not
wife
real.
Yes. My wife and I have worked in the African American community for like pretty much 20 years. Tutoring kids, doing stuff, providing services. We've done all that. Now, why do I say that? Because we worked with a white pastor in Arkansas. The reason we worked with him is he saw a way through the grants that we were doing that he could make some money tutoring African American kids. And so we did.
Smart.
And we ended up going camping with him in Arkansas. This is like, I don't know, fuck, 12 years ago. At a certain point, he turned to me and he said, I was raised racist. My dad was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. I was raised to believe these things. I went to college. I had a few black friends and I started to change my mind. He said, in working with you guys and working with these African-American kids in these depressed neighborhoods, I've realized that it's just a matter of opportunity and that we as Christians, he's a very Christian guy, pastor, can make a difference and change their lives. And I can say that I don't subscribe to any racist viewpoints. So my point is, a douchebag at one point can become a non-douchebag. We just have to bring them along.
And if they're rational people, and that's the thing, is that if they're rational people, they can have that change of heart, that change of viewpoint. You know, I mean, I was fortunate the way I was raised. My dad was raised very racist as well. I mean, his mother talked about lynching people outside of town in Tennessee way back in the day.
Like pro, not con.
Yeah.
She's all for it.
Right. You know, and I didn't know this until I had spent like, a week in her home. And I learned things about her. I went, oh my, oh my. I didn't know anything.
These were your grandparents?
My dad's grandparents. Yeah, it wasn't my grandfather so much. It was my grandmother for the most part.
Okay.
And essentially I learned that was one of the main reasons why my dad left Tennessee at a young age, was to kind of get away from that environment. And he made various different points over the course of my lifetime growing up that showed me he was definitely not a racist at all and changed my perspective on things. And the thing that really turned me full bore into not seeing race in terms of in how it colors my point of view was reading a book called Black Like Me, which was essentially about a businessman who decided to go blackface. And this is like in the 50s or 60s, I can't remember the era, and walked the part of a community of African Americans in Mississippi. And he saw how white people treated him solely based upon the color of his skin, not based upon him at all. And so that's what clicked in my mind, where I went, well, there it is. You know, it's not anything that this guy particularly had done. It's solely because of the color of his skin, which means that people are not the color of their skin. People are not what their outward appearance is. They are only what's inside of them. So that
on some TV show in the late 90s, they had Michael Moore did this thing where Danny Glover tried to hail a cab in New York City, and then they hired this white guy who had been in and out of jail like five times, committed multiple felonies in his life.
Yeah.
And of course, you know who got picked up and couldn't get a cab.
And there's white privilege.
Even though
right
Danny
there.
Glover's, yeah, Danny Glover's a pretty great guy, never been arrested. And
so that's like
a
premium.
Criminal.
That's a premium example of white privilege. Anyway, my only point was like that's what changed my point of view and how I see things and how I work with people. And so, from my own point of view, I don't know if I've told you guys the story before, but when I was in starting college, I worked at a lumber yard in downtown Baltimore. I was the only white guy there. I got along with people pretty much, but I didn't know what the Confederate flag meant, other than it was like a symbol from the Civil War. I didn't know
the Dukes of Hazzard.
I didn't know the symbolism behind it. I didn't know the visceral nature of it. And so one day, and this is a shirt that I had bought when I was in high school overseas. So, and there was like Confederate hats and stuff and Confederate flags and you buy stuff. It just looked kind of cool to me. So I had a shirt that had the Confederate flag on it, and I wore that to work one day. Again, I'm the only white guy amongst all of the black guys who were working there. And everybody stopped talking to me that day. And I really didn't know why they did.
Mm-hmm.
I really had no idea. Now, there was one guy I had a better relationship with than others, and I asked him, I said, listen, everybody just kind of stopped talking to me today. Why? Oh, they think you're in the KKK. I was, what? I'm like, there's no way I'm in the KKK.
And then
like,
the next day you were... The next day, you wore your Sid Vicious swastika T-shirt,
no, I
punk rock T-shirt.
That. No, the next that day, I threw that shirt in the trash because there's no way in hell that I would ever be a member of the KKK. For one thing, at the time I was Jewish, and you know,
they
the KKK, not big fans. You know, which is also a thing that made my grandmother unhappy was the fact that my dad married a Jew. So,
ooh, ouch.
It wasn't a big fan.
Wait, hold on. Are you not Jewish anymore? Because you said when I was Jewish.
Well, if you ask my mother, I am, but I renounced the religion sometime in college, a long time ago.
All right. Fair enough.
If Hitler rose to power, he'd throw Matt in a camp.
What's that?
If like a guy like Hitler rose to power, you'd get sent to the camps.
That's what
if you're
my mother
or
keeps
not.
Telling me.
It's true. I mean, it was ethnic
okay,
Jews.
Greg, but it's still pointless because he's long dead. Anyway.
But a new one might come to
about to say something. All right, fine, whatever. Why do I have to have this stupid argument with you?
And here's the thing, though. As a graphic designer, I have to say the Confederate flag as just a design is pretty cool.
It is. I agree.
It is a cool design.
Well, because it's got regardless, red, white, and blue, but in a different pattern. It's
the funny thing
looking.
is it's not even really the Confederate flag. It's like a Confederate battle flag. The Confederate flag
right,
is something completely
different. What I'm saying is that symbol, that logo, whatever, right. it's a well-designed thing. Just the same with the Nazis for a second. Yeah. Let's talk about the Nazi uniforms.
They had good fashion sense.
Oh my God, those guys were sharp. They were on point for sure.
Made you wonder why they picked the swastika as a symbol, though. Why was that chosen?
It's thousands of years old. A lot of cultures use that symbol.
Yeah, but why would German nationalists who are so focused on the white race be interested in running that particular system?
Hitler wasn't a mysticism. He really had this affinity for all kinds of weird mysticism and going back to old cultures, and so maybe tied in with his mystic love of weird old cultures that were mystical.
Maybe it was,
but he flipped it. You know, he does it opposite.
German mysticism or something.
Like in India, you see the swastika, but it's always the opposite way, counterclockwise. And
well,
Hitler made it clockwise.
Americans have it.
They used it too. I know. It's like weird. It's this symbol that's all around in history.
Yeah.
I have no idea. But
talk about cultural appropriation right there. Right. The swastika. Everything.
You know, the minute you have a mixed race couple, you've got cultural appropriation. One for the other. They've appropriated each other.
Their genitalia. What? I've appropriated this other race's genitalia for my use.
No, the entire body.
That too, but
all thoughts and
yes,
and genitalia.
So
taken.
So Matt, I don't think Matt, it was a rhetorical question, but
which one?
Asking about the revolution, like what is the real reason behind it? What do you think? It's more economic, the racial thing, or is it just like people are just like scared of losing democracy, like? This is a revolution against.
You're talking about the revolution now.
That seems yeah, exactly.
To be coming together. I think it's yeah. all the things that we talked about. It's,
all combined.
It's the Me Too movement. It's like it's, and I was being serious about the whole anti-douchebaggery thing. You know, that's really a large part of it, is because the people, the people who can really make things happen, are not doing it for the benefit of people. They're doing it for the benefit of themselves personally. They're not truly seeing the big picture of like. How can this work to benefit everyone? And you run into these various different ideologies, from capitalism to communism to democracy to socialism, which all have their own ideas, and everybody thinks theirs is the right one. But ultimately, it's going to have to come down to what works the best for the most amount of people. Can that be done, and can it be done with somebody who's relatively sane running things or not?
I know this is kind of hypothetical, but if we had a president,
yes.
who didn't think of women as pieces of meat and didn't think of any other race as an underling, but he was had the same fascist tendencies of like muzzling the press and telling them to shut up, could there be a revolution just for that? If Trump had nothing to do with the whole racial thing going on, he so wasn't a racist.
Well, it's hard just, to just toss that out because there is such a history of racism in our country. I mean, it's yes. been designed since there were slaves, you know.
I'm just saying if he was sensitive to that and he actually listened to these people and said, I'm gonna try to do the best I can, but he still had these anti First Amendment tendencies. It's like that alone is reason enough for revolution. Someone who doesn't respect what it takes to be an American president, which you have to defend the Constitution. That's your first job, is defending the rule of law that we've set up.
Well, yeah, I think the question is, what is the president or any elected official supposed to do about the preconceived ideas of individual people?
They can't stop racism, but there's many laws you could do. Like, there's still laws on the books that are like, you know, okay, prejudicial against.
But what laws people. Specifically do we need to pass to make in the sense of what government can do? What laws do we need to pass to achieve equality? I mean, I really feel like the American people and the American government have done a pretty good job of trying to make things as equal as possible, if not more equal, rightly so, for people of color. I think we've done that. So where do we go now? I feel like we're just arguing about people's mindsets, which we can't legislate against. We can't do anything about that.
You can, in a sense, which comes through education, right? So it's not that you can force somebody to change their point of view, but you can legislate what people will be educated with and what they will be learning in terms of from when they're young into how they're growing. And essentially, it's like an indoctrination of a proper mindset, which is something to kind of stay away from whenever you're trying to legislate a belief and what have you. But because
yeah,
I think a large part of it comes from religious beliefs.
Tell me about that, Matt. Tell me how the government mandated indoctrination of our youth is a good idea.
It's called the Department of Education.
It's called teaching them real history, maybe, instead of whitewashed.
Right. You know, and if we could find what the real history is, it can be tricky. But there's a few books out there which go into the real stuff. I think, though, in terms of it all has to be isolated to what's the problem you're trying to solve. Right, so I think the real case, so for example, bring up Black Lives Matter, that the real situation there is police brutality and being against, for what can be seen, against minorities, more so in terms of percentage-wise against white people. Now, there's certainly lots of brutality against white people, and so maybe that's also the thing that needs to be changed is the brutality as a whole, regardless of skin color, needs to be brought down too. You shouldn't just be beaten on people. Although some people, to be honest, need to be beaten on. because they
legislators can easily right now just, that's one thing they could definitely do is pass laws that actually uphold laws that exist already, that you can't murder an unarmed person just because you're a police officer.
Yeah.
If an unarmed person, and there's proof that you just killed this person, that's not, he's not a judge, he's not a jury, he's a police officer. He's got to take him to the station and book him.
Right.
And this keeps happening. It's not just these, it's really, and imagine before cell phones, we didn't even know they were happening. There's probably thousands of people. And none of them, none of these police officers, so few have gone to jail for it or even been barely reprimanded. Like,
I think that it didn't really happen.
So they feel they can still do it.
We've got a rabbit in my front yard. What the heck? It's just a rabbit randomly grazing in my front yard.
Okay, ABD guys, get out on your train.
I have a rabbit in my living room. I've never
seen that happen before. That's but, right there. Anyway, you guys can see it, right? So, I pointed to it.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah, it's cool.
You vividly painted it in my imagination.
I'll turn my laptop around. You see the rabbit out there in the yard?
No.
No, it's too far away.
And neither can the listeners, Matt.
So you're going to edit this out. Going back to your point, Matt, you know, unfortunately, the numbers in terms of African-Americans being killed by cops and white people being killed by cops doesn't add up. The statistics, and I don't have them in front of me, and I've certainly looked at them, and I've looked at them critically. They don't add up. Yes, African-Americans are killed by cops. So are white people. The problem is cops. The problem is that our cops are generally unprepared for the work they have to do, and their orientation is not what it should be. So unfortunately, the defund the police, which is a good idea, but it's bad marketing. It should be that there should be a radical change in the way that police interact with our communities, whether they be white or whether they be black, because whether they be white or whether they be black, the kids that get shot and the kids that get murdered are generally poor kids.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like kind of the nature of the system in terms of the communities in which they live, because there's the rampant drug use, and drug use means drug dealers, and drug dealers means cartels, and that means killing.
Crime.
Generally, whenever you're dealing with that particular mindset. And the education needs to work towards trying to get people off the drugs, but one of the ways to get people off the drug is to help out their self-esteem and their lives be a little bit better so they don't have to rely on those things fully as an escape. And, you know, there's just so many different layers to the whole problem that has to be dealt with. But the fact is whenever it comes to police, some people shouldn't be police at all. Some people, I think, were essentially criminals who never got caught, who then joined the police so that they could then have the okay to be able to commit similar crimes. They did that because they could see it.
I think that's a bunch of them, to be honest.
At least I think so too.
They were bullies in high school, at the very least. They might not have been criminals, but they were bullies.
Like, it attracts a certain mindset. There are legitimately decent. I know there's the whole viewpoint that all cops are bads or they're all pigs or whatever you want
that's
to say.
Not true.
I know that there's decent guys out there, and it's hard for them to speak out against the system as well, as we've seen from the movie Serpico, if anyone read the book Serpico.
Yes, as seen in the movie Serpico.
That's right.
Good source material.
I like to quote movies as reality.
Serpico!
Based upon, you know, a situation where it's one cop in the middle of a corrupt system, a bunch of corrupt cops trying to do the right thing, and essentially they're trying to kill him for trying to do the right thing. So there is that difficulty at the same time, and Internal Affairs winds up getting a bad rap because they are the ones who are supposed to dig into that, but they're getting shut down by the Brotherhood of the Police Officers because they're looking out for their own guys, whether or not they did something wrong, because they don't want necessarily it to happen to them. So there's all these freaking layers that are involved in dealing with the situation, and ultimately it really comes down to anti-douchebaggery laws is, I think, what's going to have to really fix things. It's like,
I thought that was interesting watching movies growing up, was the IA guys were always shown as like weaselly fucks.
Right.
Who, I mean, they're a very useful, they're an amazing thing that we have. It's like, yeah, they'll stop the bad cops. But no, in every movie, they're like, they just want to fuck with the good cops. They're just like, I want to take all the cops down and try to nail them. They're just assholes always. They're never
I think there needs
they're heroic
to be,
what they're doing.
I think there needs to be less, less polarization towards whistleblowers. There needs to be less backlash
whistleblowers
towards whistleblowers. And yet, you know, Trump was all about exposing whistleblowers because he didn't like what they
shit.
Were saying.
Right? Yeah, yeah. But a good person, like, a good person likes whistleblowers because, like, wow, thank you for alerting us to this problem, and we wouldn't
yeah.
know.
Unfortunately, that can't become, like, what the Stasi used to do in East Germany, which was get people to spy on their neighbors. And
no.
it turned into that also in terms of whistleblowing, is you can have people who are like, hey, you know, this guy over here, I saw him do this. So you'd have to have a lot of heavy screening for anyone who would be in a whistleblower perspective. Anyway, it's just dealing with human nature, and human nature can be really messed up. And that's a large part of it. But, you know, we've had issues in this country since the very beginning. Because it was so hard to ratify our original constitution, and there's always been the polarization between the left and the right and the center, and the people having different
the poor
points
and the rich.
How things right, and that's a large
that's the main
part of it
one
too. You know, a lot of poor people are that way because there's something wrong with their lives and they can't get out of it. But a lot of them are there because they're lazy bastards who want people to do things for them. Right?
Oh, so. Jesus Christ, really?
What? Am
really?
I wrong? Am I wrong with
huh?
that? Am I wrong?
I'm not lazy, Matt. I'm poor.
I said there are people who have difficulty getting out of it. And
No.
I'm just saying it's a combination.
No.
It's not
no.
a combination? You're saying that there
no.
are people who just love, they don't like the handouts that they get, and they just hang out and enjoy the handouts? You think there's nobody like that?
That's making it super simplistic. But
well, that's I have to because there's no real complicated stuff going on here.
Okay, fair enough. So let me see if I can, you know.
I mean, I don't mind being
the idea.
With,
the
but,
idea. Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
The idea that poor people are poor because they're lazy.
Some
they're
of
not
them.
No, stop.
I said some of them. I didn't say all of them at all.
But that's the same thing as, you know, it's kind of.
There's rich
like
people
there's
who
no,
are lazy, too. I'm not being
okay.
wrong in my statement.
Okay, hold on. It's kind of like there's no Me Too movement for poor people. If you're poor, you're fucking poor.
Yeah.
So you're a child and you grow up poor. You didn't choose to be poor.
Right.
You weren't lazy as a child because you're poor.
Right.
And that's the majority of poor people.
Yeah.
So saying that people don't try hard or they
I've
don't
said
work
some
hard.
Some of
no,
them.
Stop interrupting me.
Well, stop misinterpreting what I said.
Okay, so go ahead. Finish.
I said it was some of them. I didn't say it was all of them at all.
Some
I didn't
of them.
Say that. Yes. And it's
well,
true.
So what
some
percentage
of them are.
Is some?
I don't fucking know what percentage it is.
10%?
I mean, you're getting like stuck on this particular point of view, and that's not the thing to be stuck on.
Okay, so what's... Well, I'm sorry.
I was just merely making the point that some people are like that, but not all of them are like that. I'm like, most of them are in horrible situations.
Okay.
That's what I said before I said the other part, and you totally forgot the first part of my statement to make your own point. For whatever reason, I don't know, just to make me wrong, I don't know why you did that.
Tell me why
you did it. Why did you decide to go after not getting the entire thing I said?
I apologize. I guess I wasn't listening to everything that you were saying.
Well,
I'm
used to that.
Okay.
Because
so
I shouldn't be listened to forever.
I just have a real problem. Kind of like an African American might have a problem with people talking about African Americans in a certain way or in a certain light, or saying that some African Americans are this way or some African Americans are that way, and trying to get off by saying, well, I didn't mean all of them. I feel the same way about the working class and the poor. You both have talked about how Trump is a piece of shit. Trump is a piece of shit, and he was voted into office because the Democrats didn't give a shit about working class poor people. And until we stop fucking around with gender politics and, you know, identity politics and stop being that, we're never going to get back to where we need to be.
I wasn't talking about the working class poor. I mean, the working people are working.
I would just like to add to Brendan's statement is that in my lifetime, what I've seen from all the presidents that I've lived through is that, yeah, the Democrats, I wish, would do way more for the poor. But when Republicans are in power, they're actively hostile to the poor. Democrats do a few things. Like, hey, there's a school lunch program we voted in, even though we did a lot of.
There's a perfect example of that. I saw
Republicans don't seem to do anything for the poor ever in my lifetime.
There was a perfect example of that just recently. I just saw it 2 days ago when they were doing the press conference for the second stimulus package. And Chuck Grassley gets on there as one of the senators who's working on this particular legislation. And he says, it just goes to show, what was his exact words? It just goes to show that if you're going to give people money, they're not going to work. Goes, and that's why part of this is not being part of the legislation or something along those lines. I wish I had the exact quote. I didn't even think I should have had it. But it's worth looking up.
You know what he should have said is if you don't give people money during a pandemic, they're not going to be able to live in homes and be homeless able to buy food.
I think he forgot there's a pandemic going on. Yeah. It's like you didn't realize that people can't get jobs right now because
it's the Great Depression.
No,
second one.
There's no jobs to get. Other than
what's really interesting about your point, Matt, is that the actual Wall Street cats, the guys that actually do the work on Wall Street, I'm not defending them. I'm not saying they're good people. But the guys that know how money and how the economy works are all for keeping unemployment at $600 a week. They're all for stimulus checks because they know that the only thing that's keeping this economy going has been those payments. Whereas the ideologues like Kudlow and others are like, oh, well, we don't need to worry about it.
That's the only reason I think they gave us that stimulus check, because the Republicans voted for that in the Senate. They didn't give two shits about me being able to afford my next, you know, pack of ramen from Safeway. They were like, we have to stimulate the economy. We have to keep these people still spending and buying their whatever stupid shit they're going to buy. The economy collapsed. They didn't give a fuck about me. They cared about the money keep rolling upwards, you know?
Well, I thought it was trickle-down economics we're dealing with.
No, that's not a thing. Greg, that's not true. Like, that's a myth.
They need you to consume. And if you can't consume, then they're fucked.
Yeah. Well, they're not fucked. That's a sad thing. They're still very, very rich, but they can't stand they're like, oh, I'm not content being a billionaire. I want to be a trillionaire so bad.
What do you think would happen is if they enacted legislation which capped your ability to earn money over $1 billion and the rest of that had to be distributed amongst the poorer classes in this country?
It would be like Stalin's Russia. That's what would happen, Matt.
But you can make up to $1 billion.
Yeah.
You can make up to $1 billion.
I think it would be great.
That would be a fine line.
Do you think that could happen? Because similar to what Sanders was talking about. Sanders was talking about taking the money from the top end, like taxing that top end, which I thought was kind of an interesting concept if you could get away with that. You know, I have an issue with going after people who are actually productive and have worked really hard as opposed to guys who are living off their interest. You know, I'm not a huge fan of people who are just living off the interest that they make, and that's, you know, how they're productive. So there's certainly plenty of lazy, rich people out there.
Yeah.
You
know, just look at Donald Trump.
Give the converse to, well, you know, the fact is that he works doing something. I don't know what he does.
Yeah, really badly.
He puts in a lot of hours doing whatever
he
does.
No, he doesn't.
He tweets all day long. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. He watches TV. He gets up at noon, does a few briefings, and plays golf.
He makes
his very lazy man.
You know, but he apparently is working until like 2 or 3 in the morning.
No, he's up on speed. On Adderall.
He's on speed.
He's on Adderall. He's an Adderall addict.
Is he?
Here's the thing. There's been plenty of times that they've tried to apply a wealth tax in other countries, not ours, Scandinavia.
We used to have one, guys. I just want to interrupt. We used to have one before Reagan. It was pretty high tax if you made a lot of money in this country. And Reagan turned that all around. Okay, sorry, just want to add that.
No, and that's an excellent point. The problem is that with income taxes, you just opened a whole Swiss cheese of loopholes. And whether this income is, as Matt pointed out, is it capital gains, meaning you made this money because you had money and now you're getting money, or you made this through wages. The problem with the income tax is that it's essentially a wage tax, and that just hits the working poor the most. Social Security, same thing. It hits the working poor the most. If you make $65,000 or more, at least last I checked, a year, everything after $65,000 is not subject to Social Security tax. If you're an African American right now, you're lucky to live to 65. So you never see the benefits of all the money they're taking out of your wage. The whole system is fucked up, but it's fucked up because of economics. It's not fucked up because of race. That's my point.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think it's both factors. I think even if we lived in some kind of Bernie Sanders utopia, there'd still be lots of problems with race. Black people still couldn't get hired because there's still people who are racist, you know, individual citizens who wouldn't want to hire them, and all the problems that happen with race, racial division. It is a problem in this country. Economics is a problem everywhere. I mean, that's always been a problem. The big division between most cultures, societies, is economics, poor versus rich. But we seem to have this black-white thing more than a lot of countries. This is a big thing in our country because of the slavery, 100 years of slavery thing, or 300 years of slavery. Well, I was thinking since the founding of our country.
22 years of slavery, is that what?
Well, that was America. Since America was founded, we still had
slavery for a year and a half is what we had.
You know what? You know what, Greg? You're absolutely right. By no means was my point that race relations and racism and all these things are, especially with the police, are not a problem. I 100% agree with that. I just think that if we were going to prioritize what we need to do now in terms of a revolution, we need to start with economics, because that affects everyone, white, brown, black, yellow, red, whatever. That's all.
So that's a starting point, but I think there's so many other issues of douchebaggery going on within our society that's a beginning point. It's like, but we have so many different beginning points that have to be hit too. Again, getting back to, say, the Me Too movement. Because in reality, if we want to be in reality, women are far more discriminated against.
Yeah, than women are treated like shit.
African-Americans, especially African-American women, more so even within their own community, right? So that's something that's definitely come more to the fore these days because of the fact that men are the bigger douchebags and have browbeaten women and have pushed them down into these subservient roles, which took a lot of work to get them out of. You know, one thing to say, even though we are middle-aged white men, even though we're the enemy, we're the devil, the fact is that all of these different laws that have gotten passed have been passed over the last 200 years by the devil, by the white middle-aged men who finally had a conscience and did something about it. And so I feel that there's still hope that can continue to happen with the you know, the white devils that we currently have in our Congress and in the Senate.
Not if they're so devilish as Mitch McConnell. He's extra devilish.
Well, you know, as I was doing my research in terms of the politics for this particular episode, it was interesting to find out that essentially Eisenhower was like the last true Republican that had a liberal sensibility. You know, after him, there weren't really any. But over the last 40 presidents, 25 of them, I think, or 26 of them, have been Republican. You know, so in 14.
You know, before John McCain ran for president when he was in Arizona, he actually was a real Republican. Like, he actually sometimes voted for things totally across party lines, like things to help the poor, help the disenfranchised. And then he sold his soul when he was running for president. But John McCain was, you know, as a lifelong liberal pinko commie. I actually admired that guy for his, he took a lot of stands that were so
not popular. Did you say that McCain was a lifelong pinko commie?
No, me, I was.
Sorry.
As a guy who mostly in my life, I grew up thinking like, oh yeah, there's another Republican, some rich, shitty fuck who doesn't give a shit about anyone. John McCain did, He did the McCain-Feingold bill, which basically was trying to get money out of big politics. You know, he's trying to cut down the lobbying abuses and the influence of money in Washington, which is a good thing for America. Not many Republicans are for that kind of shit. You're not going to see many Republicans up there, and not many Democrats, unfortunately. One of the most corrupting things in our government is this whole legalized bribery shit we got going on. So a lot of bad things come out of that. The fact that you're allowed to basically take bribes. Tobacco industry, you can keep killing people. We're going to keep, and I say that as I smoke my cigarette.
Yeah, no, McCain was, I met John McCain. McCain was,
really?
He was a legit guy. He really believed the things he believed. And
he just picked a horrible running mate.
Oh, fuck.
She was gorgeous, though. I have such a crush on her still. Beautiful lady. Yeah, horrible person. Beautiful woman.
Whatever. But
she was so hot.
But anyway, what? He was a good guy.
She stabbed her knife into your heart and twisted it.
Yeah, he was poorly managed as a candidate. For sure.
Oh, he backflipped on everything he ever believed in. It was sad seeing that because I lived in Arizona, so I knew some of his voting record and how he was this. He really was a maverick. It wasn't just, you know, rhetoric. He actually did so many things most Republicans would be totally scared to do, like to go against party lines. And
right.
Well, I think going through what he went through in Vietnam probably opened up his eyes quite a bit to what he's willing to do and not willing to do. It's like if he can suffer through what he suffered through in Nam while he was a POW, he could handle people talking bad about him in the Republican Party.
Right.
But he seemed to lose that, though, when he was running for president. He knew he needed a consensus to get their approval. And he kind of sold his soul, I thought. Yeah, but he was a good guy.
Well, again, you know, he was referred to as a rhino by many people. And again, if you're not familiar with that term, it stands for Republican in name only, which is a way of the hard right Republicans to essentially dehumanize anybody who doesn't have their same stances. So,
because they have a little conscience and a little heart. Right, exactly. You fucking rhino. Well, you care about
people. There used to be a center in both parties, you know, and the center has eroded to a large...
There's a huge center in the Democrat Party. There's lots of centrist Democrats, and a lot of them run things, and I don't like them. That's why I'm a Bernie Sanders type guy. I thought Hillary Clinton was a centrist. She's not radical.
No, you know what?
It is only radicals that change things majorly, so...
Obama was kind of a centrist.
No, he wasn't.
He was. I mean,
if you ask the Republicans, he was a communist.
The Republicans say, there are corporate Republicans, there are corporate Democrats,
definitely,
and then there's everybody in between. That's how I see it.
So it's basically the rich, 1% are rich, and everyone else is just fucked. Republican and Democrat, we're the peons, we're the serfs.
Yep.
Of this world. Slaving away.
So, Greg, what's your solution to all this?
Oh, that's
Greg,
so easy.
I need you to keep working at Burgerville.
Burger City.
Flip those fucking burgers and stop complaining.
I know.
And vote blue no matter what. You need to vote for Joe Biden no matter what. I don't give a shit that your life hasn't improved. You need to vote for Joe Biden because Trump.
I'm sorry, any Republican would not be better for my life as a poor guy. I've seen it in my lifetime. They never pass laws that are like, hey, we're going to expand this welfare program or social program. I've never seen it happen.
The Republicans actually put together the precursor to the welfare state way back in the day.
You know, back in what day?
Back in the American day.
2,000 years ago?
Not that long ago. We didn't exist then.
A billion years ago.
A billion years ago, the Republicans were uncharged.
Just to give you an example of this, Nixon was in favor of a universal basic income, which passed the House and didn't pass the Senate because of Democrats.
Is this true? How could I have not heard
this? Check it out.
I will.
YouTube it.
I do know that Nixon was actually like one of the decriminalized during Nixon. I'll Google it or I'll tweet it or I'll Facebook it. But Nixon actually like made it like decriminalize the heroin thing. That's when all the methadone clinics came up, and it totally succeeded. Crime went down, and all these.
Who did that?
Nixon. But then it was Reagan who made the whole war on drugs, which turned it all around. Like Nixon was just like, we got bigger fish to fry. Fuck, you know, we don't want to deal with all this crime because all these junkies are stealing people's TV sets. Give them their methadone. Who gives a shit? Why clog up the jails with junkies? Give them their methadone. It worked amazingly well.
Until they got addicted on methadone.
That doesn't really happen. It seems, no, what do you mean it doesn't happen?
It absolutely happens. Methadone's more addictive than heroin.
I've never heard of a methadone addict.
They don't get a house. They don't get a great high out of it. Let's put it that way, right? Because yeah, methadone is free. That's why they don't break
exactly.
The house. I'm just saying it's still it's a really addictive drug. Is my point. Yeah,
but it's free, and so you have people robbing people and mugging people to get money to pay for their illegal habit. So it was a good solution.
So it still comes down to why are they doing the drugs to that extent? You know,
because they're miserable.
Why are they miserable, Greg?
Because most people are in this world. So most people have a pretty raw deal.
How can that change? Know. How can we change the misery?
Bernie Sanders.
You can't change the misery.
No, you can. You can
can't.
I think that's the next t-shirt slogan, Greg. You can't change the misery.
Okay, Brendan, you grew up poor, right?
Yeah,
I'm sure your mom could have gotten food stamps and maybe some programs.
Yeah,
and
she did.
Imagine if they weren't there. You would have been extra miserable. You might have actually starved to death. You might have not gotten any health care, and you might have died from pneumonia when you were 8. Things can definitely get worse. The social safety net's a good thing. I know it costs a lot of money.
Hold on.
I don't think Brendan's disagreeing with you there.
No, I know that. I'm saying, but this is all part of the thing. These are laws that were passed. It's not like something that you can't solve or at least alleviate a little. I mean, having food stamps was something congressmen, legislators did. And it helped a lot of people over the, 7 decades it's been in effect. It's helped a lot of people. So you can pass laws.
Yeah, if we got rid of the arms industrial complex, we could just put a lot more money back into our our infrastructure, and that would change a lot of things. But that's a hard one to beat.
I think, Greg, here's the thing. I believe that everyone should receive a universal basic income. Everyone should get no questions asked.
From Andrew Yang.
Yeah, thank you.
I thought the same
thing. He wasn't the only one. I think Martin Luther King supported it. So did Thomas Paine. So I think everybody should get that because we can't afford it. It should be obvious to everyone now that if the situation is dire and we need to pay people to survive, that we can. Now, we have to do that as a part of, I don't know, giving Boeing a bunch of money or a bunch of other corporations a bunch of money. We don't have to do that. But we can give people money, and we should. And that's a good way to go. Now,
well, I think you're absolutely right. There's so many things that have changed because of the quarantine that are going to completely make everybody revisit how everything works and how you can survive and what you can do. I mean, I'm in a fortunate circumstance where money isn't really an issue for us right now. I'm more socially liberal and fiscally conservative. So that's
okay. I was just pointing it out for the listening audience.
Listening audience, if you couldn't figure that out on your own, Brendan helped you solidify your point of view about me. All right.
So, Matt's more of a middle of the road guy who just likes to mock everyone, so he doesn't want to take any stance. So like,
who's mocking?
You will have to mock.
I take everything seriously.
Okay, I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to understand where on the spectrum I stand.
Which spectrum are we talking about now? Because we talked about spectrums a few episodes back.
Yeah.
Let's not go back there, please.
Not that spectrum.
I will forget what I said. Never mind.
Politically, so basically you have to look at politics, sort of say somebody's on the left or on the right, as an unclosed oval. So you have at one section, you have like fascism on the far right. And as you move to the left, you get to the center, you know, where these Democrats are, but then it starts to curve around a little and go all the way back to communism, which is a very close friend to fascism, but one is very, very far right, one's very, very far left. They're not connected, but they're close. And so it's basically those extremes.
I think that's a misnomer, though. Like, I don't think Joe Stalin had a liberal bone in his body. He was a complete and utter fascist.
Well, I'm talking more about, like,
even though
Lenin.
He was considered left.
I'm talking about Marxism and Leninism.
Lenin was pretty bad, too. He just didn't live long enough to show his true colors. I mean, those guys did believe, like, yeah, the people have to be led. We don't really believe in freedom of speech.
All right,
we know
well, let's
what's
just
best.
Go straight Marxism then, in terms of that perspective and that type of anarchist point of view.
I would say the far right and far left on that spectrum, ideally, what's more closer to what Marx wanted is like the social democracies in like Finland and Sweden, where they're like, yeah, everyone should be fed. Everyone
anyway,
should have health care.
Brenda just wanted to know where he fit on there. So go tell him, Greg.
He's basically like, he's better than Hitler. Better than Idi Amin.
Oh, that's great.
He's definitely better than Idi Amin.
That should be
sure.
Where we end this particular episode, is that Brendan is better than Hitler.
I'm kidding.
I'm better than
Brendan
Hitler.
Is not.
Yes.
Brendan is, I think Brendan's very in the center. Brendan sees both sides, and he's very willing to be, like, converse with both sides. He's, yeah. And that's a good thing.
You know, I think he tends to have a libertarian perspective, but it's not
yeah, but that,
colored by the psychosis.
Libertarian can be very liberal sometimes.
Right, but they're more of like a faction within, you know, the right.
They're wild cards, you're right. Yeah. They're like wild cards. You never know, because some libertarians are just like, I want the freedom to be able to run roughshod over everyone else and pollute things.
Yeah.
Like, oh, corporations should have the right to dump plutonium somewhere. There's those kind of pro-business libertarians. But then there's all the great libertarians who for decades have been like, fucking legalize pot.
So what,
have we actually done
we can't smoke pot.
Have we done our client
there's all the great libertarians that wanted to legalize pot and really play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons, and I definitely
good
fall
for them.
In that category.
And that was that was Johnson, because he like was the CEO of like a pot company.
So I want to say on the spectrum, Brendan is chaotically neutral with 16 hit points of awesomeness.
A constitution of 7.
That is so awesome, Greg, because I've been indoctrinating my wife and my child into Dungeons and Dragons. They actually play every Thursday night.
I'm calling Child Protection Services, Brendan. That sounds horrible.
You should. And we spent a whole bunch of time doing like character alignment, and I was explaining it all to them, and we did a whole bunch of that. And I showed them, and I took the test with them, and I said, look, I'm chaotic neutral. And then we looked at all the different, like.
So you were on it, Greg.
Wait, I guess
yeah,
so.
No,
you really are chaotically neutral?
Right.
Wow.
That's why I wanted to validate him and say he was 100% right.
Hilarious.
I'm a genius. I'm a dungeon master.
You are.
Extraordinary.
You are a genius on the spectrum. So
I'm a DM.
This has been a quite interesting podcast we've done today. So have we done our client justice? Have we handled
I don't think
revolution
so.
In the air?
We've
it's
talked about revolution in
it's
history.
Definitely
more.
In the air.
It is. And we really didn't. I think we more talked about
revolution. Well, this
revolution
is probably our more serious history. One of our podcasts. We have to lighten things up for next week.
Yeah, I think each one of us should have a closing argument or closing statement relative to the client.
Okay, well, go ahead, start, since it's your idea.
Oh, great.
He wanted us to talk first so we could think of something.
Oh, like, we planned this.
Yeah, fair
I
enough.
I have my
fair
closing
enough.
Arguments all lined up in front of me.
Fair enough. Greg busted me on that again. I got it. So I'm going to go back to the point of, obviously, there is a huge amount of discord in the country, and a lot of that is focused on race. And while I feel that race is definitely an issue and it must be addressed, and the problems with our police forces must be addressed, I don't think that that is the essential core of the problem. I think if we could solve in this country the problem of economics, And the true revolution is, how do we get the boot off of the neck of people who are struggling at upper middle class income levels to make ends meet day after day? If we can kind of figure that out, I think a lot of the problems that we see will vanish. So I think that the problem is, the revolution is economics, not race.
Well, maybe I just want a slight rebuttal to what Brendan said. And I think that racism is not going to go away. Like in the 50s, America was like one of the strongest economies in all history. I mean, it really was like two cars in every garage. Everyone was doing pretty good. That's when the upper middle class basically started. And there was still lots of racism. So, I mean, I guess as a white person, I could say, yeah, I would love the economy to be better and everyone raised up.
Well, yeah, all the Jim Crow laws were happening then, too.
But sometimes, if like 20% of the populace isn't, it's not a good thing. It's not the country I want to live in. But to me, it's more actually, I think most of the ferment right now is really because of Trump.
Did you just say ferment?
Ferment.
Like with what happens to create alcohol?
Yes, that is a synonym.
Synonym
of the word.
And how are you using the word ferment here?
Cinnamon.
But how are you using cinnamon? I'm just curious. I think you mean foment.
Foment.
Yes.
You can't say ferment. Like things are fermenting and bubbling up and rising.
If that's how you're using it, okay. It's just not typically used in that way.
No, but foment.
But if you're talking about a rebellion or revolution, you usually use the word foment.
Okay. Foment.
Yeah.
Foment. I think the main reason of this, like, real fervor, if you will, with anything we've seen in America, like we've had many protests in America, but like never this sustained, so many cities, so huge, because people, I think, even if, like I said, even if we didn't have any of those problems, even if we lived in this, like in Finland, there's a leader of our country who's basically like threatening us every day on his tweets saying, yeah, I would love to get rid of democracy and take over. I mean, I know he's not saying that literally, but read between the lines. He's saying it. He's saying, like, I don't care about the First Amendment. We have the strongest people.
How does this apply to our client, Greg? What is your final statement regarding our client?
Well, I was saying that's part of the client, is that's why revolution is in the air so strongly, more than it's, I think, ever been. Like, this makes the 60s even seem pale. I know the 60s were very, lots of demonstrations, but there seems to be a real panic. Like, I hear lots of people. I hear people talking, word on the street. People are actually thinking, like,
you've just been hearing people saying things in the street.
Is there going to be a coup d'etat in America? I mean, I don't think people said that during Nixon's reign. I thought he was a shitty president. But, like, yeah, Congress, nobody will go along with that.
Coup d'etat! I keep hearing the circle.
Yeah, there you go.
Coup d'etat!
I wish we had music on our show. But so that's my conclusion. Is
that was our music.
This definitely started it. Definitely the Black Lives Matter thing. But I think the foment, the fermenting of it into a tasty brew of revolution is definitely because we have this president in office who's like really just like, because you know when he takes power, you won't even be able to protest, talk about this stuff anymore. You'll be thrown in a camp or something if there's a coup d'etat.
When he takes power, he already has power, Greg.
I'm saying that power.
It can't be a coup d'etat if you're the guy running things.
No, you could be an elected president and then say, I'm suspending Congress.
Yeah, but it's no longer a coup d'etat. It's just you're changing the style of government. That's different.
That's called a coup d'etat, Matt. Look it up.
I think I'm going to, Greg.
If you suspend democracy, that's called a coup d'etat. I mean, even on a small level, martial law, you know he would love to declare martial law. He could just tell all the journalists to fuck off. Hey, it's martial law. You got no rights. You can't even ask me a question. You write to the bad.
So I was looking at coup d'etat, meaning the particular individual, but okay, yeah, you're more correct on that.
Well, yeah, it's just like anytime someone, because that would be ending our government.
Just the removal of the government. I was thinking of it as removing the person in power. So that's
He's attained, you know, gotcha. he is the guy in power, but it's still, he has to work within our democratic government. But if he wants to declare martial law.
If we were to change our government right now from the republic, because we're not really a democracy, we're more of a republic, what would we change it to? What would be the form of government that would work the best?
pure democracy wouldn't be so bad. I mean, if the majority of people kind of want something.
No, I think it could
be. I'm not saying they're going to force the minority to do whatever the fuck they want. If they really love democracy, they'll say, like, well, we'll still respect you. You can do this.
We have to look at all of them. We're not just talking about racial minorities. Just talking about minorities of all different types.
That's what I'm talking about. Sorry, I meant political minorities. I meant.
Right.
Okay, you're the losing guy. You're the losing party. We're not going to, like, put you in a camps or tell you to shut up. This is a democracy. So you can still talk and still be in our Congress if you've got enough votes. But we, the majority of Americans, want this to happen. They don't want to go to war in Iraq, for example. If we could have voted for that, 70% of Americans were like, I don't want to go to start a war. That would have been a good thing, I think. It's like, 70% of Americans think it's dumb. Maybe it is dumb. I mean,
maybe we just take away Congress entirely and leave every vote up to the American public.
We might be able to do that with the internet now. That's the weird thing. We could have pure democracy.
No. No. The last thing we need, you know, majority rule does not work in an insane asylum. And if either one of you want to convince me that America is not basically an insane asylum, I'm all ears.
Oh, I'm on your side with that one, Brendan.
I gotta be honest, though. I wish there was more, like, votes about major things. Like, should we have universal health care or not? I think we should have more elections that are just, like, America's voting on this.
I think Brendan has a point, though, Greg. The majority of Americans are nuts. Let's just get back to ending the show.
Okay. Well, Matt, you still haven't actually given us your conclusion.
Well, I was waiting for you to finish your statement.
No, we were all debating topics, but don't blame it on me. Fine, though.
All right, Matt.
If I have to stop blaming things on you, this show ends.
I know. Right.
So
in terms of my point of view, is there revolution in the air? There's absolutely revolution in the air. It's definitely there. It's the question is, will it dissipate or will it continue? And it really depends upon how our leadership handles these next couple of months.
Are you optimistic about that?
I have pessimism for every election I've ever voted in. So
no, but this one. You think Trump's going to handle it well and dissipate the revolution?
Well, I think he's going to continue doing what he's doing. I think he's going to make it just as bad as it currently is. But, you know, there's also the other thing to look at is that it's being incited in other areas, too. It's not just through him. There is a system in place which maintains – that's where the whole term systemic racism comes from also.
Yes.
There are systems in place which cause these things to go forward – not because of anybody specifically being racist, but because of the nature of how things were designed to cause that to occur. But again, it's not just Black Lives Matter. It's not just racism. It also has to do with all the various different other human rights violations. You know, there's a big movement right now on the right, which I'm not necessarily disagreeing with, about a huge pedophile rings going on. Like, if those are legit, hey, take them down. Shut them down. It's not necessarily something we've got to make our main focus, but it's something of concern. Another major concern is still the Me Too movement and women being sexually abused, and that needs to also be taken under control. And people think that they have the right to do that to other people based upon their gender. You know, that's another thing that needs to be taken into a major perspective as well whenever you look at all this stuff. So there's like mini revolutions that are all happening. Specifically, I mean, even about freaking wearing masks during a quarantine, where there's its own revolution happening, right? There's so many different, and it's not just the left that's revolting, it's the right that's revolting too. It's revolutions on all sides. It's what's taking place. The only place it's not really happening is in suburban homes. It hasn't quite gotten there yet in full force. They haven't quite seen what's been going on in the downtowns of the various different cities. They've heard of it, and they've closed their eyes to it to quite a large extent. So whenever that finally happens, when the breaking point finally hits full suburbia, and I'm talking to, like, white upper middle class, is basically what I'm talking about, when they finally start feeling the effects of it, then you'll see a full-bore revolution taking place. But until that time happens, they're going to kind of be happy with the status quo because they're still able to get their food. They're still able to work and however they're working. They're still not being affected by these other issues. So I don't think that's going to change.
What I'm looking for is an update on our money and our views.
About we didn't do that today.
Do we have that?
Oh.
Yeah, what's our
No one said anything, and I forgot to caught up in everything. So let us see. Where are we right now?
And I'm hungry.
Money. We have, hey, we're getting closer to a pizza.
We're thank God. I've been starving for months.
$1.98. We've read $1.98.
That's right, so now. Far. I'm going to.
So that was
$1.98.
That's just like so 20 cents more than last week.
That's fantastic. Wow. Just so you know, Greg, I tweeted out to Domino's, Pizza Hut, DiGiorno's, and I forget somebody else. Saying,
God bless you.
I have a friend in Portland that needs pizza. Stop fucking around. He needs pizza.
Yeah, unfortunately, our statistics aren't that great in terms of over the past month, in terms of listeners. It's kind of our graph is kind of going down. So we're going to have to do some more promotion of the podcast if we want that to peak up a bit.
So we've got less listeners the past couple weeks.
Well, here, I'll show. I don't know if you can see this or not, but right.
Oh, shit. That looked terrible.
Yeah, I'll try that again. All right. It changed.
It still looks terrible.
Yeah, it's basically going down.
What are those black dots?
The black one up the top, it's 21 was our most in one day.
And then
zero
the
is
other
the
black
least.
Dot is our lowest?
That's where we had nobody listen to it during one day. But all these
so basically we're doing
things,
something
so there
wrong.
There were days when we had lots of no zeros. We got zero again a couple of days ago. So yeah, I know I haven't promoted as heavy recently, and I was doing that. So I'm gonna see if I can still figure out Reddit to make that change. But if we want to look at the plays of the individual episodes, so we've had 14 plays from last week for the television versus movies. It actually was more than I was expecting. Sex Sells is kind of stagnating. It's only 21 plays of that.
That's weird.
Idiocracy is kind of moving up. It's definitely past all the others except the first one. It's at 39 plays. Ethnic Foods is still number one at 49. But Idiocracy is now seems to be moving up. So, you know, this gives us a little bit of an idea of what people are paying attention to. Song Lyrics on Trial, still 28 plays. And Most Useful Inventions, Part 1, 33 plays. Part 2, Television versus Movies. I have a feeling this particular episode might catch people's attention or not. Was that all the information that I needed to cover, Brendan? Did I forget anything?
No, I just wanted an update on the money.
Okay. And so you've been putting stuff out on Twitter?
Yes, and this next week I'm going to do a bunch more.
Okay, I think with this particular episode, you can start hitting different civil rights organizations.
Yes.
This has been the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker Computer Telecast, where any advice has been designed purely for amusement and deep-sea diving. Please take a candy on your way out, pet the lion tamer, and subscribe to this computer telecast if you know it's good for you. The Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker deny all culpability in today's events and are not to be confused with real law offices that have a secretary and books and stuff. Thank you all. Have a good day.